6:52, and it is, what's Wednesday? My next guest, the author of the book, Letting Go of Self-Destructive Behaviors, A Workbook of Hope and Healing. Lisa Ferentz now joins us. She's a has spent 30 years in private practice as a therapist. Lisa, great to have you here.
Thank you. My pleasure to be with you.
30 years. That's a long time.
Well, I like to say I started when I was two, because otherwise I sound really old.
Yeah, that's. Does this kind of work ever get tiring, or do you ever feel burnt out from this kind of thing?
You know, I think there's always the vulnerability to burnout, but the truth is I have a very good balanced life, and I'm very mindful of doing a lot of self-care. And because I work with trauma survivors, and it's actually such inspiring work, I feel very blessed to do what I do. It's a privilege, and I feel very rejuvenated after working with these folks. They're very brave people, and they actually get better. So that's an exciting thing to witness.
How long does that take if someone shows up in your office? Is it days, weeks, months to really feel better?
You know, it's funny you ask that, because I would say that's the number one question that a patient or a client asks when they start the therapy process. The first thing they'll say is, how long is this going to take? Mm-hmm. And my answer is always, it's going to take for as long as you're getting something from this process. And, of course, depending upon how significantly traumatized a person is, sometimes it's really years of therapy, because there's a lot to undo and there's a lot of healing. Mm-hmm. And for other people, you know, they may just choose to do therapy for weeks or months and then move on. So it, that's a really variable thing.
And what is it that is healing? Is it just them talking about what they went through, or is there guidance you give them that really makes the difference? What is it?
It's both. So the ability to be able to really kind of piece together one's trauma narrative, and then to be able to tell that story to a compassionate and non-judgmental witness, which is the therapist, that is inherently very healing for people, because one of the key ingredients of trauma is secrecy and shame. So when somebody is allowed to openly talk about their experience and, again, get a lot of compassionate response, then that also kind of lessens the shame. But these are also folks who, because of their trauma, they operate from a lot of very distorted beliefs, and so there's a lot of work that has to happen.
Like, what do you mean, distorted beliefs?
Believing that what happened was their fault, believing that they're damaged, believing that they deserved it. And when you go through life with those kinds of thoughts, that's going to profoundly influence other choices that you make in terms of your relationships and, you know, in terms of where you choose to work and what you do for a career. So all of those things can be impacted by those core beliefs that people hold about themselves and the impact that it has on their self-worth and their self-esteem.
So when they show up, though, have they never talked to anybody else about their trauma?
In some cases, yes. I mean, I know that can seem hard to believe. My oldest client is 72 years old, and until a year ago, he literally kept completely silent about, you know, very horrific and chronic abuse that he experienced throughout his childhood. So, yes, many people do hold on to the secrets of what happened, and therapy is the first time they talk about it.
So if you've been living with something for, you know, 60, 50 years, what makes you want to suddenly go into therapy then?
Well, you know what? Usually become very symptomatic as a byproduct of keeping that secrecy. Often these are folks who grapple with addiction issues and with other forms of self-destructive behavior. Oftentimes they really struggle with intimacy issues and trust issues. Their marriages have often fallen apart. So, you know, everybody has a breaking point. Everybody has a threshold in terms of how much suffering and dysfunction they want to endure. And often those are the tipping points that then bring people into treatment.
I'm talking to Lisa Ferentz. The book, Letting Go of Self-Destructive Behaviors, A Workbook of Hope and Healing. Letting go. So letting go is such a gentle term to let go. You just kind of let it fly off into the sunset?
I wish it was that easy, Michael. It would make my job a whole lot easier.
I mean, you could have used the word stopping, right?
Well, and you know what? I deliberately didn't. So I'm actually glad that you're noticing that, because when we push people to stop their self-destructive behaviors, it feels like a power struggle to them, and it feels disrespectful to the fact that they've been using those strategies in order to cope and to self-soothe and to medicate. So the idea of letting go, I think, takes the power struggle away and lets them know, and this is what they get to learn in the workbook, that there are many other ways that they can begin to tell their trauma stories and to self-soothe and comfort comfort themselves so that the self-destructive behavior no longer feels necessary. And when it no longer feels necessary, they really can then let it go.
When you talk about self-destructive behaviors, like what are you talking about?
So we're talking about anything from any addictive behavior, substance abuse and alcoholism, mm-hmm. to acts of self-mutilation, cutting the body, burning the body, to any eating disorder behavior, anorexia, binging, purging, mm-hmm. to a sexual addiction or a gambling addiction or an internet addiction, all of those things. They're self-destructive in the sense that they either cause physical distress or emotional distress. Mm. They complicate their lives, and they always leave them with shame.
You say it's not a matter of stopping, it's not a power struggle, but how do you go about stopping something that you've been doing for many, many years?
You need replacements, and that's what the workbook is about. So it's learning other ways to tell your story, other ways to stop the overwhelmingly negative thoughts and feelings.
So what replaces, let's say, drinking too much? What do you replace mm-hmm. that with?
So if somebody is drinking too much, what we want to first understand is, what are they using the drinking too much for?
Well, to numb themselves, let's say.
Right, right. So part of why people numb themselves is because they believe that they can't handle dealing with whatever the pain is about. Mm-hmm. So once they're in a therapeutic relationship and they're learning strategies, they discover that they actually can handle dealing with
What is the replacement? What are we talking about? Going to exercising? Is that a replacement?
So we can definitely talk about exercise. We can talk oftentimes about medication. These are often folks who have undiagnosed, untreated depression and anxiety, and so they definitely benefit from medication. We teach them how to do acts of self-soothing through visualization and guided imagery. We teach them cognitive strategies so that they can begin to address those thoughts that work against them. We teach them, frankly, how to be in trusting, safe relationships through therapy so that then they can increase their network of social support, because these tend to be folks who are very isolated as a byproduct.
Well, that's hard to reverse. Are there people that just don't seem to take to therapy?
Yes. You have to want to do it. I think it's as much about the expertise and the compassion of the therapist as it is about the willingness of the patient to want to do the work. And there are times that therapy definitely is painful and feels uncomfortable, and it takes tremendous courage and commitment in order to kind of travel through that process. And there definitely are people who say, you know what, this hurts too much, this is too difficult, mm-hmm. I don't want to do it. And, that's certainly their prerogative and their choice. So not everybody.
Well, one last thing. You talk about someone that hasn't shared this, their trauma, mm-hmm. but what about someone who has shared it repeatedly with friends and others, yet they don't seem to get over it? What happens in those cases?
Well, we have to look at the responses that they've gotten. So you may be right, they've shared it many times with friends, but friends are not trained professionals. And in all likelihood, friends are not addressing those negative thoughts that I alluded to. And friends are not teaching them other ways to self-soothe and feel better. So it's not just repeating that narrative over and over. Mm-hmm. It's you have to repair the experience of trauma. And for that, you need a trained professional.
Right. Is there something that's destructive about repeating it too much, focusing on it too much?
Yes, there really can be, especially if it's sort of like you're just on a hamster wheel, You're telling the story over and over, but as I say, there's nothing reparative about it. In fact, if all you're doing is telling the story over and over, that can become re-traumatizing for a person. So you want to be able to change, your thoughts, your emotions. There's things that have to change. It's not just about telling the story over and over.
But I mean, in a sense, do they tie themselves to the trauma as part of their personality and who they are? Is it tough to disentangle that?
Yes, you're right, because for some people, part of their identity is as a trauma survivor. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that identity can sometimes mean I don't have to take responsibility for things, right? The world has harmed me and hurt me, and so therefore, I'm just going to sort of cocoon myself, and I'm not going to take responsibility for my own healing. So we call that secondary gain, that there mm-hmm. are people who get some secondary gain from staying in that victim mentality and that victim role. Yes, that does exist.
Lisa Ferrance, the book Letting Go of Self-Destructive Behaviors, a workbook of hope and healing. Find her online at lisaferrance.com. That's FERENTZ.com. Lisa, thank you so much.
Thank you, Michael. Take care.
You also. And that is it for us. Michael Cohen, producer Solomon Martin. We are back tomorrow, 6 p.m., 1320 WILS. Good night.